everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort on Drive Through HR. We're live on February 25th, and our guest today is Kate Bischoff from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and the law firm, I hope I get this right, of Zell Hoffman. Is that correct?
Yes, right.
Great. Excellent. Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, Kate. As I said in the pre-show, you and I are connected a few places but have not met, so it's great to get a chance to talk to you. And we're going to go over some HR technology and the law discussion today, but why don't you introduce yourself to start out? Tell us how you became an expert in employment law and some of these topics, and then we'll jump into the discussion.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'm Kate. I am an employment lawyer by trade. I work at a law firm that is historically known as a pillar of civil litigation. And so in order to do civil litigation, we need to have lots of technology at our hands to go through, you know, million-plus documents in any particular case. And so I have been fascinated by technology and the impact it can have on the workplace since I was an HR director for the State Department, and we had lots of technology that we used. And when I came home from the State Department, I threw myself into learning what was out there for technology, and in the past 14 months, I've found a lot and have started talking to clients about what concerns they have about using technology and what pestering concerns I could have about the use of technology in the workplace, whether it be a piece of human resources technology or whether it is just social media in the workplace or smartphones and all that kind of stuff.
So, boy, that's so true. I mean, technology is like we count on it for everything today, right? I mean, I don't go anywhere without my cell phone, and yet for lawyers, in many ways, email, cell phones, texting, all that kind of stuff is just like you talked about trying to track through millions of pieces of that. That's like discovery and all that, right? I mean, can you talk to us about that for a minute? About, you know, what I think a lot of HR people, you know, say, oh, let's jump into technology, you know, and then they, because it makes life simpler, it lets you reach out to your employees. You don't think about the back end of the legal stuff so often. So can you tell us about some of the darker shadows that we should be thinking about at night? Yeah.
Sure. You know, I am a big proponent for technology. I believe technology can solve lots and lots of business problems or HR problems in general. But there's a risk to everything. And if I was to tell my clients they should have zero risk, they should have zero employees, right? I mean, employees by very nature are incredibly risky. So when you add that layer of technology, every email, every instant message, every text, every tweet, and every Facebook post all can become subject in a lawsuit, whether that's a discrimination lawsuit where we're talking about, you know, who said what, when they said it, or if we're getting into, you know, more wage and hour. When were they using their smartphone to respond to a customer complaint? When were they, you know, doing their job, and so they should be paid for that time. So all of each individual piece of electronic information can be relevant to discrimination or wage and hour case or any other employment tip case. So all of that gets tracked, and when a client comes to me and says, Kate, I'm being sued, I'm going to ask for all of it because I know I'm going to need it at some point. And just the sheer volume of it created by technology at this point is can be so overwhelming that I even need technology to help me sift through it. So
there's like software tools that lawyers can get that help you do that stuff, right? I mean, isn't that all an entire industry unto itself?
Oh, yes. You know, there's the joke that lawyers are always like four steps behind on the technology curve, you know, the adoption curve, and we are. But there are some tools out there that we have been using, and I use to help my clients, and particularly when they have investigations or litigation. I'll give you an example. I have a client who, let's say, has 200 employees, and there's a board member who believes one of the executives is having an inappropriate relationship with an employee. And they go to the HR person and say, we want you to investigate this. Well, my HR friends would go, oh my God, where do I even start? I don't know who, I don't know what, I don't know when. Well, using the tools that the legal profession has started to use and my firm has regularly uses, I can say, well, give me his PFP file, meaning his entire email and calendar file. Then, you know, at some point, he plugged his phone into his computer to charge it. So there's a backup of his phone on his computer. So I'm talking to one IT guy to get that information. And then I throw it into my tool, and within 12 hours, depending on the size of the data, I can tell you the four people you need to talk to, the two or three smoking gun emails, and I can take that investigation, which looks like a huge rumor mill, and I can shrink it down to, you know, an hour of discussion and within like 3 days. So it can be really easy to use these tools and really beneficial and cost effective for my clients.
So well, gosh, there's so much that I can think of that. So like cell phones, for example, right? Lots of employers have gone to bring your own device policies, and that, you know, lots of people, you know, send email at all hours of the day and night, some of it work related and some not. And many employers have all kinds of very long, tedious reading, you know, information technology, security access policies. But most of the time, I think people are still people. We just did this themed week last week of HR horror stories, and we talked about all the crazy things people do. And, you know, I mean, people send emails very casually these days with probably very inappropriate remarks in them at times. What can an employer do? Like, I mean, granted, you could not hire anybody and you could never turn on a computer and then you're safe maybe if you don't open your mouth. But in the real world that you just described to us where you can, like, audit a person's an entire work history in a day, what can an employer do to kind of to help itself right now?
Well, an employer can take a bunch of different steps. First of all, it can have a policy. You're exactly right. They're long, they're tedious, and, you know, essentially every policy in a handbook is saying, you know, be a good kid, right?
Right.
So if we start with you need to hire the right people, that's a start, but everybody hires a bad apple or a bad employee at some point. That's just the cost of doing business. So if you want, there is technology out there that will monitor things like, you know, loss of trade secrets. Raytheon is one company that's been developing software that can monitor when an employee takes confidential information and emails it to himself at home. You know, that's a risk that employers want to mitigate as much as possible and then confront them if they're violating that policy. So there's software that can do that piece. There's also software that you can put as an overlay for emails and things that talks about semantics and can read whether an email is hostile or an email is happy, and you can kind of gauge on an employee engagement level whether or not people are happy. That, too, contains some risk, because if you're using the semantic overlay, are you missing the harassment complaints? Are you missing pieces of information that you really want? While it can be a great tool, are you creating this assumption that you're going to use it all the time to find all this stuff? So it cuts both ways. And I promise you I won't tell a client you can't use a piece of technology. I just want to make sure my clients are using it in a way that's mindful and appropriate for what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it does. So what about like with software tech vendors? I mean, a lot of companies go out and try to find a solution, I think, for, you know, to solve whatever issue they have in terms of whether it's information management or email or ATS. I mean, but those companies don't shelter the employee from the law and that kind of thing, right? I mean, there's so many things I'm thinking to run through. I had to ask you, but sorry, sure that's the best question. So what about tech vendors? What should an HR person think about when they're selecting software from a legal standpoint?
Well, the first thing I would say is a tech vendor has no requirements to know the law and or comply with the law. Okay, so you can't assume that the vendor you're talking to is even aware of a piece of law that you could get in big trouble with. And I'll take, for example, disparate impact cases.
Mm-hmm.
Under discrimination law, if you have a neutral policy that still has the discriminatory effect, you can get in big trouble. So I'll use an example of a big data piece. You know, there's a whole bunch of these companies out there now that can do analysis on your historical data to find out what makes a good widget maker. And then then you look for these 10 factors and through your applicant tracking system, and then if you find someone with those 10 factors, you pretty much know that that person is going to be a good widget maker. At least that's what how the vendor advertises it. But what if one of the pieces of the information is that they always wear purple socks and Asian women never wear purple socks as just a blanket piece? If your use of that data point means that Asian women are going to be significantly less likely to get the job, then you have a violation of Title VII. And you can unwittingly create this problem if you don't take the time to validate the data, which is what the EEOC would want you to do with it, and, you know, talk with a vendor up front about how we make sure that each one of these data points doesn't result in disparate impact piece of it. So having the dialogue early on would be really helpful, but it's not always something you think of because the vendor is telling you, you have an issue, I have a solution. And so it takes some time to work through these pieces.
And it sounds like what you're saying is too is that having software, having a tool doesn't shelter the company from any kind of liability either. You can do things in your discussion with the vendor or the tech the person that's supplying you the tech, but you still own it, right? You still ultimately own liability for all that stuff, even if they're doing the searches and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Even if the software is allowing you to use, is allowing to creation of the disparate impact or the violation, it's not necessarily going to fall to the software maker for liability. The EEOC is going to say it's your problem. They were your agent. This was a product that you were using. So when clients come to me and ask about adoption of tech and, you know, they're in the purchasing phase, I talk about, you know, what if the technology causes an issue? What if it results in some sort of human action that causes a problem? So can we talk about putting in some indemnification language into that purchase agreement or making the tech vendor understand that they have to comply with the law and that they will cover attorney's fees and costs if there is a problem with it? So that kind of discussions to kind of shift liability, reduce liability, or make the vendor aware that you're going to bring them along with if there's a lawsuit or a charge of discrimination.
Right. So HR tech, hang on 1 second here. Let me just get a note here. And so I'm about to do a reset, but before we do that, what I'm hearing you say is HR tech makes it a lot easier to violate the laws, and it's buyer beware, right?
Right.
kind of sum up. So let's do a reset here. And this is Michael Vandervoort on Drive Through HR, and our guest today is Kate Bischoff. She's an attorney in Minneapolis. I feel today I live in Georgia, and it feels today about like Minneapolis. We're getting supposed to get snow, so I'm kind of like, why did I move to the South? But and she's talking to us about HR technology and some of the risks associated with that from an employer point of view. So we were just talking about kind of the wrap up of what she said in the first 10 minutes or so, which is it's still a lot of the liability and risk resides with the employer. Don't count on your vendor to be the shelter. It's not going to happen. They're not a buffer. And in fact, there are some things you should be doing to set yourself up to help mitigate some of that risk. So let's jump and start. Maybe go in that direction. What else can employers do to help reduce their risk when it comes to technology? What can they do with their employees, for example?
Well, for the employees, I would advocate that you need to have the right tools in the right people's hands. And to determine who the right people are, you need to make sure that they know where the risk is or risks are with the particular piece of technology. So, for example, if you're a company that has, 10,000 employees and you have historically a diversity issue and you want to bring more diverse candidates into your applicant pool, well, there are tools out there that can help you do that by, at the click of a button, you can only find minority candidates. Well, if that's the only thing your recruiters are doing is clicking and trying to find minority candidates, you're missing white candidates. You're missing male candidates. And so you may be violating Title VII when you do that. So you need to make sure that the staff who are using the tech understand that they can both use those tools to increase the applicant pool, but that they can also have to do other steps to make sure they're not excluding particular candidates out there so that they're not, walking into or backing into a discrimination claim of a different variety.
Makes sense. What else in regard, I mean, this is such a, there's discovery, there's training of associates, there's a lot of HR stuff. What else? I mean, if something like this goes to trial, I guess, or, goes to litigation, what kind of situation is an HR person facing?
Oh, I would think an HR person might be staying up at night quite a bit, because I would be if I was that person. Not all HR people are going to be aware of where the costs are. Today, an average lawsuit, my guess in employment discrimination, is going to cost $250,000 in attorney fees on the company side alone. And most of the laws that we're talking about have what's called a fee-shifting provision, which would require the employer to pay the plaintiff attorney's fees as well. So if a plaintiff wins, you're already at $500,000, and we're not even at the spot where the plaintiff is receiving any money from a jury award or a bench award. So the cost of going sideways with an HR tech, piece are huge, and I can't stress that enough. Now, I don't want to say that I don't want to give the impression that I don't love HR tech. I love HR tech. I do vendor presentations. I see the demos. I constantly watch what's going on with the HR tech hashtag, and I'm fascinated by it because it really does solve problems. But the back end, if you are going to be the guinea pig and accidentally use a piece of technology that gets you into a great deal of trouble because you unwittingly stumbled into something, this is a big cost that a company could face. There are some ways that companies can try to mitigate this, and while we haven't tested those theories or these theories extensively, we can think that there might be some insurance that would help problems like these, whether it be an employer's limited liability practices a piece, or some directors and officers, or even having a piece of cyber insurance that could maybe cover some costs that go along with it. So
I'm not familiar with, D&O and stuff like that, yeah, but I've never seen a cyber policy, which that definitely doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Are you familiar with that kind of offering, or is that?
I am very lucky, Mike, because I don't have to be. I have a cyber insurance expert at my firm. So when I have a question, I just walk down the hall.
Got it.
But I know that there are these pieces of insurance do exist. So, for example, if Sony has a hack and lots of employees' social security numbers and salaries are released and allowing for tax fraud and identity theft, it's possible that a cyber insurance policy would help cover the costs associated with that. When you use a third-party vendor to process payroll, you're using the wires and the fiber and the Wi-Fi to send sensitive information and personally identifiable information of employees through the air, and that, too, can be hacked. So are you making sure your vendors who are getting this personally identifiable information, are they secure enough? So writing that into the service agreement and making, are they testing those security measures? Do they have insurance if something happens?
So a lot of this actually kind of goes back into other parts of the business. I mean, HR should be probably the one that's taking the lead on looking at this kind of stuff. But what you're talking about is a lot of contract negotiation and purchasing, right? You know, insurance, you know, all sorts of risk management. Like, especially in a bigger corporation, I mean, they have risk management departments that look at this kind of stuff. They have purchasing, you know, contract purchasing negotiator type people that do this all day long. So a lot of this should be built into like standard agreements, but especially if you're buying anything related to HR tech is what it sounds like I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely.
Much more challenging for a smaller company or a small business though, isn't it?
Right. It's much more challenging for a small business. And I would say that in some even larger companies, when they're looking at vendor management and they have a procurement department, you know, it's still HR's responsibility to talk to the procurement agents about, you know, discrimination law and what could happen and how they plan on using this, so that you can build in those pieces of contract language that I would want a client to have when they're using a new piece of technology. Because if a procurement agent might not know anything about Title VII. They might not know anything about reasonable accommodation or data breaches, or even the use of data and who, you know, a piece belongs to. Like, for example, if you're using a technology that allows you to do video interviewing, who does the video belong to? You're going to want to make sure that is in the agreement as well, because, you know, if the company was using an algorithm to determine whether or not this is going to be a good employee, the vendor is going to want to keep that interview, because that's just only going to improve their algorithm going forward. Well, technically, it belongs to you, and the OFCCP is going to want to see it if they come knocking on your door.
Well, my area of employment law that we were talking about earlier is more towards the labor relations end than towards
mm-hmm.
technology. And I just saw there's an NLRB case that's been filed, and it's actually it's from the U.S. Postal Service, and it was brought by the American Postal Workers Union because the post office apparently had a data breach, and employees'
mm-hmm.
personnel information was leaked, or, you know, not leaked, but it was hacked, and the post office took some kind of action. I'm not really that familiar with the case, but they took some kind of action. The Postal Workers Union raised an issue about, you know, we want a chance to bargain over this, and now this is now an unfair labor practice charge about whether or not unions have the right to bargain over these kind of breaches. So, I mean, these things can go all kinds of directions that you don't foresee. I mean, most companies today don't have unions, but if you do, it could actually turn into an NLRB case, which is not inexpensive litigation in and of itself either, right?
Right. It's definitely not inexpensive. I mean, it's incredibly expensive. And it's the National Labor Relations Board, which, you know, the wind flies in each direction and could change each day.
Right.
So the predictability of the National Labor Relations Board can be problematic in some of these cases. But
so
it's
you
not,
think,
it's,
sorry, I'm talking over you. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's a variety of agencies, it's a variety of venues, it's a variety of different types of litigation, right? You've got all these, you got board charges, you got hack, you know, you've got hacks, you've got EEOC, disparate impact. I mean, we've talked all over about all kinds of different potential causes. What do you see the most frequently? What are the kind of causes of action that are really being litigated out of this? Are they all over the map, or are there certain trends you can point to?
Well, I can honestly say that right now there's not a great deal of litigation about it, but I anticipate in the next 5 years we're going to see an explosion of it, particularly when we're talking about things like wearable devices in the workplace and more attention being drawn to disparate impact. I mean, there's a professor, a postdoc student at Princeton who wrote, and a Third Circuit Court of Appeals clerk who wrote a paper on does big data discriminate, and walking through each piece of the analysis. You know, plaintiff's attorneys are going to see this technology, they're going to read that paper, and they're going to start seeing that there are going to be trends and that there's a potential for big, deep pockets here. So
mm-hmm.
I anticipate within the next 5 years we're going to see a lot more litigation about it, and we're just at the tip of the iceberg, and I'm hoping to, you know, raise my microphone high and say, guys, let's talk before we get to the litigation stage.
So do you speak on this, or do you do webinars? Are there resources where HR people can go and learn? I mean, obviously, you've been, you know, all this is very general. You can only do so much in a half an hour. But where can someone go to really get more familiar with this and, you know, kind of up their level of knowledge? Besides calling you, of course.
Well, that would be step number one. I'm happy to take any call anytime. But, you know, there are some, you know, resources. We have a blog that talks a lot about it. It's the Employment Law Navigator. We talk a lot about technology and particular kinds of tech and what you can do about it. And there are, you know, starting to be other pieces. The American Bar Association is having our Technology in the Workplace seminar in March in San Francisco, and expect to see me tweeting a lot about it. And we're, you know, each time I find a new piece of technology, I send it to my employment law nerds like Kaylee Gold and Casey Seitz, and we talk about, oh my goodness, can you imagine all the problems that would come up if this was implemented incorrectly? So I'll give you one, Mike, that you will be able to spot all the issues right away. There's a new employee badge, and the company just received $1 million of funding. It's a new employee badge that records every conversation. It records where the employee is during the day, including whether they're in the break room, they're in the kitchen, they're talking to other employees, they're off-site, where the badge is. And this sort of monitoring that helps the company make business decisions about what processes they should, that could work better for them. Okay? So this raises huge labor law issues, right?
Right.
This is employee surveillance gone awry.
Right, because you can tell everything they're. I mean, and it's just like being able to have access to email. I mean, that's not like having access to email, but it's right. It's. I mean, it's incredible how much you could learn and who was gathering when, where, right, and saying why were you meeting with this person from another department or whatever. And as soon as a union campaign, we're down to. I'd love to talk nerd stuff with you for a couple hours, but we're down to 3 minutes. I'm going to give you one back that you want. This isn't really HR technology, but it's the web, because we didn't even get into social media. Go take a look at a website called Get the Memo. It's all one word, getthememo.com. It's an app, and it's a website that's going to allow employees to anonymously leak memos from their company to show what kind of employers they really are. And
everybody wants to be Edward Snowden, right?
Right, because why not, right? I mean, you can move to Russia and become famous and get mentioned on the Oscar show and all kinds of good stuff. So you have a blog. You mentioned Casey Seitz. I'll plug him. He's a guest next month. I'm looking forward to having him on to talk, so this is great. Where can people find you? Let's kind of get ready to take us out. Where can people find you on the web and your firm and your, you know, all that kind of good stuff?
Sure. Well, our firm email is really easy. It's zelle.com, Z-E-L-L-E.com. We are in Minneapolis, so we have offices kind of across the country. So you can find us relatively easy, all of our contact information. I'm on the Twitters, and I love Twitter. It is one of my favorite tools I use to find information and disseminate information. So, in fact, I think I cyber-stalked Nisha. But I use those kinds of resources to find me and to find other people to connect with who are talking about this.
Okay. Awesome. We're ready to wrap. We're going to play some music. Thanks for being on the show. It was very informative. Hopefully we can get you on again to talk more HR technology law.
Great. Okay? Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks for being the guest today, Kate.